It was the beginning of December, deeply cold and gray, with the rain pounding as always, but the oak fires had never burned brighter in the vast rooms of Nideck Point. The distinguished gentleman, who had now become, in Reuben's argot, the distinguished gentleman, were already talking of Yuletide, of old and venerable traditions, of recipes for mead and food for a banquet, and ordering fresh green garland by the mile to adorn the doorways, the mantelpieces, and the stairway railings of the old house. It would be a Christmas like no other for Reuben, spending it here in this house with Felix Nideck, Margan, and Stuart, and all those he loved. These people were his new family. This was the secretive yet cheerful and embracing world of the Morphinkinter, to which Reuben belonged now, more surely than to the world of his human family. A charming Swiss housekeeper, Lisa by name, had joined the household only a couple of days ago, a stately woman with a slight German accent and a very well-bred manner. She had already become the mistress of Nideck Point, seeing to countless little details that gave everyone more comfort. She actually wore a uniform of sorts, consisting of soft, flowing dresses in black silk or wool that fell well below the knee, and wore her blonde hair in what used to be called a French twist, and smiled effortlessly. The others, Hetty, the English maid, and Jean-Pierre, Margon's valet, had apparently been expecting her, and they deferred to her, the three of them often whispering together almost furtively in German as they went about their work. Each afternoon, Lisa turned on the 3 o'clock lights, as she called them, saying it was Herr Felix's wish that they never be forgotten, and so the main rooms were always cheerful as the winter darkness closed in. And she saw to the fires that had become indispensable for Reuben's peace of mind. Back in San Francisco, the little gas fires of Reuben's home had been pleasant, yes, a luxury certainly, and often entirely neglected. But here, the great blazing hearths were a part of life, and Reuben depended on them, on their warmth, on their fragrance, on their eerie and flickering brilliance, as if this were not a house at all, Nideck Point, but the heart of a great forest that was the world, with its eternally encroaching darkness. Jean-Pierre and Hetty had become more confident since Lisa's arrival in offering Reuben and Stuart every comfort imaginable, and bringing coffee or tea unbidden, and slipping into rooms to make beds the instant that the groggy sleepers had left them. This was home, taking shape ever more completely around Reuben, including its mysteries. And Reuben really didn't want to answer the frequent phone messages from San Francisco, from his mother and father, or from his old girlfriend, Celeste, who had in the last few days been calling him regularly. The mere sound of her voice calling him Sunshine Boy set him on edge. His mother would call him Baby Boy or Little Boy once in a while. He could handle this. But Celeste now used her old title of Sunshine Boy exclusively for him whenever she talked to him. Every message was to Sunshine Boy, and she had a way of saying it that struck him as increasingly sarcastic or demeaning. Last time they'd spoken face to face, right after Thanksgiving, she had laid into him as usual for dropping his old life and moving to this remote corner of Mendocino County, where apparently he could do nothing and become nothing and live on his looks and the flattery of all these new friends of yours. I'm not doing nothing, he'd protested mildly, to which she'd said, even sunshine boys have to make something of themselves. Of course, there was no way under heaven that he could ever tell Celeste what had really happened to this world, and though he told himself she had the best of intentions for her endless and carping concerns, he sometimes wondered how that was possible. Why had he ever loved Celeste, or thought that he loved her? And more significantly, perhaps, why had she ever loved him? It seemed impossible they'd been engaged for a year before his life was turned upside down, and he wished for nothing more right now than that she would leave him alone, forget him, enjoy her new relationship with his best friend Mort, and make poor Mort her work in progress. Mort loved Celeste, and Celeste did seem to love him. So why wasn't all this over? He was missing Laura painfully. Laura, with whom he'd shared everything. And since she'd left Nideck Point to go back home to think over her crucial decision, he had had no word from her. On impulse, he drove south to seek her out at her home on the edge of Muir Woods. All the way, he meditated on the many things that had been happening. He wanted to listen to music, to daydream, to enjoy the drive, rain or no rain. But matters closed in on him, though not unhappily. It was afternoon, and the sky was leaden and gleaming, and the rain never let up. But he was used to this now, and had come to see it as part of the winter charm of his new existence.